The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back to the Dan Prof Show, and I was drawn to this article at AmericanMind.org because of its headline. How could you not be drawn by the headline, The Rise and Fall of the Pajama Boy Nietzscheans? Pajama Boy Nietzscheans happened to be the name of my high school band. We were a Fine Young Cannibals cover band we used to kill with She Drives Me Crazy. So by the way, the piece fits in nicely with a piece that was written by William Vogley over at Claremont Review of Books about identitarianism, which I want to pick up with this author and our next guest. He is C. Bradley Thompson, the BB&T research professor at Clemson University, executive director of the Clemson Institute for the Study of Capitalism, and author of America's Revolutionary Mind, A Moral History of the American Revolution and the Declaration That Defined It. Brad, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Hey, thank you very much. My pleasure to join you and your audience today.
Please say hi to Dabo Sweeney for us, too, when you get back to school.
Everybody wants to say hello to Dabo Sweeney.
Of course. So God is not dead, but pajama boys are?
Well, the pajama boy reference, of course, is to the left-wing Obama-supporting commercial,
right,
which advertised a young man in his 20s wearing a onesie pajama, and it was a source of great critique of conservatives. But what I try to argue in my article is that there is a new kind of pajama boy on the right, a kind of pajama boy Nietzschean, as I call them, who have actually many similar qualities as to the left-wing pajama boys, except that they're, rather than pajama boy Marxians, they're pajama boy Nietzscheans.
So develop that a little bit more, because you go after the reactionary right, and specifically single out Notre Dame's Patrick Deneen, who wrote a book, Why Liberalism Failed, which we've discussed on this show with him, which you describe as a book devoted to denigrating the principles of the American founding.
Yeah, that's right. So there are five different people that I discuss in my essay. The first two, Patrick Deneen and Sohrab Ahmari, are not what I would call pajama boy Nietzscheans. They are a different sort. Namely, they are what I would call sort of high church Catholic trad cons or traditionalist conservatives. And they have reputable academic and media positions. They write books. They're very public figures, public intellectuals. Whereas what I call the pajama boy Nietzscheans are much younger. They are a generation in their 20s and now 30s who have in many ways suffered at the hands of the left their entire lives, these pajama boy Nietzscheans, as I call them. This is a generation of primarily young men who, from the time they entered kindergarten until the time they graduated from university, were told that they are racist, sexist, and homophobic by definition and by virtue of the fact that they are white, male, and, as they say, cisgendered. And so this young generation arose online in a kind of the dark web in the years after 2008, and it was an entirely online community that they self-dubbed as Frog Twitter, and for many, many years, they were just entirely underground. But they have come out more recently, and they have come out primarily, I mean, I would say the two intellectual leaders of Frog Twitter and the Pajama Boy Nietzscheans are someone who goes by the pseudonym of Mencius Moldbug, although he is known as Curtis Yarvin. He's a well-known tech entrepreneur. And the second and the most important one is known as the Bronze Age Pervert.
Yeah.
That is his pseudonymous name that he's given to himself.
Yeah,
and he has self-published a book on Amazon called The Bronze Age Mindset.
This
book now has sold tens of thousands of copies and has a huge following amongst young men and women, primarily young men in their 20s and 30s. Interestingly enough, many of whom are highly educated. Indeed, many of them are PhDs in political philosophy.
Yeah, hold on right there, because we got to take a break. But when we come back, I'm familiar with the Bronze Age Pervert. Michael Anton over at Claremont Review has written Publius Ducius Moss by his pseudonym, has written about him as well. And to put the Bronze Age Pervert in the same category as Patrick Deneen, I need to get a better handle on that. So we're going to start there with Professor C. Bradley Thompson from Clemson University, author of America's Revolutionary Mind, A Moral History of the American Revolution and the Declaration That Defined It. More with Professor Thompson right after this.
Fakers, fixers, and takers. He's Dan Proft, and this is the Dan Proft Show.
Welcome back to the Dan Proft Show. We're speaking with C. Bradley Thompson. He is the BBT research professor at Clemson University, executive director of the Clemson Institute for the Study of Capitalism, and author of America's Revolutionary Mind, A Moral History of the American Revolution and the Declaration That Defined It. And we're having a conversation, maybe a little bit esoteric, but hopefully this sparks our listeners to look into some of the authors and thinkers that we're talking about to better understand the argument that Professor Thompson is making about the so-called the new pajama boy Nietzscheans on the right. And I just want to go to Patrick Deneen and Bronze Age Pervert. That's where we were before the break. A Catholic scholar at Notre Dame and the Bronze Age Pervert. I find it difficult to put those two in any of the same category. So tell me why they belong in the same.
In a sense, they don't, right? I do not and do not put someone like Patrick Deneen or Sohrab Ahmari in the same camp with the Pajama Boy Nietzscheans and the Bronze Age Pervert. They are very different. They hold different philosophies, but they are united, and this was the point of my article. It's the largest, most important part of the article, and that is they are all united by one theme, and that theme is a kind of anti-Americanism. So Deneen and Sohrab Ahmari, on the one hand, and Deneen is quite explicit about this in his book, Why Liberalism Failed, they reject the principles of the American founding. They reject the founders, what I call their classical liberalism. They reject the principles, the self-evident truths of the Declaration of Independence, because, as they would argue, those principles lead to the moral nihilism of 21st century America. So Sohrab Ahmari, for instance, and Deneen would argue that the founders' principles, the idea of freedom and rights, leads to drag queen story hour, for instance, or you're forcing children to have operations changing their sex. Or they would argue that the principles of the Declaration lead to the Port Huron Statement of the New Left, all of which I completely and entirely reject. The founders' principles lead to no such thing. Now, the connection with Bronze Age Pervert and Mencius Moldbug is that the new Pajama Boy Nietzscheans, and I am referring specifically there to Moldbug, as he's known online, and Bronze Age Pervert, they too reject the principles of the American founding. Quite clearly, Moldbug in particular rejects those principles, and indeed he regards them to be self-evident lies, the self-evident lies of the Declaration of Independence, he would call them. Instead, he favors the 17th century Stuart monarchy, and he thinks the American Revolution was a mistake. And Bronze Age Pervert has not been explicitly as anti-American as this Mencius Moldbug or Curtis Yarvin has been, but he too rejects the idea of the principles in the Declaration of Independence as, at best, irrelevant for 21st century America. So those are the ways in which the essay connects someone like Patrick Deneen with Bronze Age pervert, in that they share a common anti-Americanism. And my essay, and then more importantly my book, is a defense of what I call the philosophy of Americanism. It's a defense of the principles of the Declaration of Independence and the philosophy of the founders' Enlightenment classical liberalism.
So on Deneen, I just want to stick with him because he's probably the most heady of the names mentioned here. He does, as you say, suggest that the inherent features of the representative Republican form of government imagined by the founders is generating its own failure. The success of it is generating its own failure. There's no question he makes the argument you're describing. But then and just to provide a prompt for more texture here, I want to go to William Bogelli's piece that I mentioned about republics in the Claremont Review of Books. And he references Madison saying that for Republic's survival and success, the right social structure matters even more than the right political structure. Government is most likely to control both the governed and itself when society is disposed to control itself. Madison contended that historically the biggest reason Democrat governance had proved untenable was majority faction. Any faction of any size perverts its own interest, but when it becomes a durable majority, then it dispenses with the strictures of the representative Republican form of government. And so Madison understood the dangers, I think, that Patrick Deneen is saying that we've realized.
I'm not sure I agree with that. So
okay.
Madison, in the famous Federalist Number 10, understood the ability of democratic majorities, majority tyrannies, actually, to impose their idea of the common good on the society as a whole, thereby violating the rights of everybody. And the problem that I have with Patrick Deneen's argument is that he has this vision, and this is true of many of the so-called Catholic tradcons, they have a vision of what they call the common good, which they think is the antidote to the moral nihilism of 21st century America. But the problem is that when you set up the common good as the end or the purpose of government, then it sets up a competition amongst various groups in society to capture control of the government in order to impose their view of the common good on society as a whole. So I'll give you two concrete and related examples. In Kansas, there was a debate in the 1990s over whether creationism or evolution ought to be taught in the government schools. In Kansas, religious conservatives captured control of the government, and they were of the government, and therefore of the government schools, and were able to impose their view of the common good and of education on a secular liberal minority. By contrast, in Massachusetts, secular liberals were able to gain control of the government and of the government school system, and were thereby able to force the children, all children, to, in kindergarten, for instance, read Heather Has Two Mommies,
right,
which, of course, was a great offense to Christian conservatives. So Madison's solution was, in part, to take away the ability of tyrannical majorities from forcing their view, their particular view of the common good, on society as a whole. And I think America and the philosophy of Americanism that comes out of the founding period was able to deal with the what academics call the theological political problem by separating both church and state, and for the most part, school and state.
When we come back with Professor C. Bradley Thompson, I want to ask whether or not the calls by Senators Rubio and Hawley for something akin to common good capitalism, as they term it, represents a good example of the affliction on the right to which Professor Thompson speaks. More with Professor Thompson.
Really, because all I want to do,
this is the Dan Proft Show.
Hey, Welcome back to the Dan Prof Show. We're back with Clemson professor C. Bradley Thompson. Professor, I want to transition from culture to economic philosophy. Would you say that a secular example of what you're describing is, say, the calls from a Marco Rubio, from a Josh Hawley for common good capitalism?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what does that even mean? This idea of a common good is an anti-concept. It's just one individual or a group of individuals trying to force their view of the common good on all people. Now, I do have a kind of loose general sense of the common good, well, as it comes out of the American founding, and that common good is the idea that the purpose of government is to protect the individual rights and freedoms of all individuals to provide for justice and security. That is a common good that I think applies to all Americans. But once you start trying to form the souls of individuals, which is what both the totalitarian left and the authoritarian right are trying to do in this country, they're trying to impose their view of the common good, which includes cultural and moral issues, on the nation as a whole.
And the common good capitalism example, I mean, isn't that sort of fundamentally a neo-utilitarian argument? We're going to do the most amount of good for the most amount of people.
Yes, it is. I mean, but to be perfectly honest, Dan, I really have no idea what it even means. And yeah. I don't think they have any idea what it really means. It just kind of sounds good.
Right. And if you use, and we shouldn't use the term, a Marxist term, capitalism, but if you believed in free markets, you wouldn't need to an adjective. It's like compassionate conservatism, right? If you believe in conservatism as properly defined, then it doesn't need a modifier. So it's a suggestion that they don't really believe, and they're doing it for, you know, political reasons or other reasons in terms of personal proclivities, as you suggest, which I think is a fair criticism to raise, or certainly concern to raise.
Yeah, I mean, Marco Rubio and Hawley, they advocate all kinds of policies that are not in accord with free markets and what I myself call laissez-faire capitalism. I mean, I use, even though it was Marx was one of the first people to use the term capitalism, we proudly raise the Jolly Roger, as it were.
Yes.
I run the Clemson Institute for the Study of Capitalism.
Yeah.
And we are interested in exploring the moral foundations of capitalism, which I think is a much, much more important issue. If capitalism cannot be defended on moral grounds, it cannot be defended.
Yeah, totally agree.
And that is precisely where conservative intellectuals have failed over the course of the last 50 years.
I wish we had more time. This is a really interesting discussion. I love the piece that you wrote, so now I'm looking forward to reading the book. The book, America's Revolutionary Mind, A Moral History of the American Revolution and the Declaration That Defined It. He is C. Bradley Thompson, the BB&T Research Professor at Clemson University, and as he just mentioned, the Executive Director of the Clemson Institute for the Study of Capitalism. Thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Great conversation.
Take care. As I thank Professor Thompson for joining us, I want to thank you for joining us as well in another edition of the Dan Prof Show. Professor Thompson left us with some heady considerations to reflect upon, maybe some new authors that he referenced whose work you should investigate. Please join us again for another edition of the Dan Prof Show tomorrow.
Far from the fake news, he's always got the real story. This is the Dan Prof Show.
You are fake news.